This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may dwell upon the earth. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm a little bit worn out, frankly. I'm about halfway around the world from where I was yesterday. I left about 7:30 in the morning, and I finally got in here late this afternoon, after a long, long trip. And I want to tell you that it was truly a moving experience for me to see the firsthand the terrible destruction of Hurricane Katrina. When I went back to my old neighborhood to work on my father's home, my boyhood home, it was just an unbelievable sight. Houses smashed. They had piles of refuse and trash at least 40 to 50 feet high on this huge area, which was a neutral ground, and perhaps 150 feet wide and perhaps 150 yards long. It was a mountain. New Orleans is perfectly flat. It's like a pancake. And to go back to my old neighborhood and see this mountain of debris, huge trees. I mean, I'm talking about huge trees, like huge factory smokestacks turned on their side, littering the area. Ice boxes, destruction. Every home was having a demo done that could be saved, but so many thousands of homes could not be saved. And then you begin to think about the personal loss that comes from such a storm. It's just incredible. My daughter, for instance, lost a lot of her possessions where she had them at one of the places, one of her friends' home that was keeping them for her, and she evacuated. And she lost all the letters that she had from me, you know, over the years. And so many people have lost letters. So you have situations where husbands and wives, all their love letters over the years, or when they were overseas, say when the gentleman was overseas in the service, or there's separation or hardship, gone. Photographs, gone. Schools, children's records, gone. Keepsakes, gone. And of course, many of the people in my old area, too, did not have any sort of flood insurance, because this area has never flooded before. And usually the ones that didn't have much of that insurance are the elderly and the people least able to afford it. How are they going to go on with their lives now? It's going to be very, very difficult, ladies and gentlemen. And when you see this kind of destruction, it just it hits hard. And you begin to realize the kind of destruction that war brings to a nation. You know, most Americans have never really seen the effects of war on our own shores. We did have the terrorist attack of 9/11. That's about the closest thing to it. Even that, even though it was a terrible loss of life, was primarily in an office building, banking and offices and other strategic facilities. But when you start going out to the neighborhoods and you see homes destroyed, and you can imagine across this country, homes destroyed by the thousands, and people being bombed from the air. It's quite a terrifying prospect, isn't it? And yet our people endured this horror through the Second World War as in no other war. You think about it literally, and I'm not exaggerating a bit here, that tens of millions of homes that were destroyed, tens of millions of businesses that were destroyed, the millions of people who suffered from the bombing, the burning, babies who were burned to death in their cribs, mothers who were burned to death trying to save their children, fathers trying to save their sons and daughters. You know, sons and daughters trying to save their elderly parents. Who did this, ladies and gentlemen? I mean, who brought us to the point where we have transformed war and from a quote-unquote noble occupation where it was a professional type thing with armies following a certain code? At least that's what it evolved to. It started out obviously pretty brutal in the earliest parts of history and prehistory. But you know, European civilization, at least up until the dawn of the 20th century, was trying to lessen the horrors of war. It was trying to take war away from the civilians. And that's when people began to make certain laws and rules and regulations. And war, in fact, if you go back in the century before that, they primarily tried to keep it between the two armies. And there was a certain code of honor involved. Now, that's not saying that there weren't civilian atrocities and attacks. But ladies and gentlemen, there was a code. And we were moving this direction. And then, as A.G.P. Vail says so eloquently in his books, Advance to Barbarism, beginning with the First World War, but then truly accelerating in the Second World War, we expanded war from attacking combatants. Who can expect that? I mean, a person who does the military service and wants to fight for his country and evoke patriotism, I guess that person can expect hardship. I guess he can expect, possibly losing his life. He can expect maybe losing his eyes or his legs in defense of his homeland. But the situation we have, of course, with the Second World War was the beginning of this mass destruction of civilians. Now, the only mass destruction of civilians we really hear much about today, and what we hear about it almost every day, was the difficulties faced by European Jewry during the Second World War. Heck, there's movies about that almost every day of the year. And again, to get the truth about that period of history, you have to have both sides. You have to have a free academic inquiry. You cannot intimidate people into silence. Gamma Rudolph is being, they're trying to intimidate into silence. They have not intimidated him so far. But apparently he's incarcerated now in this country. He's married to an American woman. They have a brand new baby. And they're trying to put him in jail, ship him back to Germany, and put him into prison simply for being an intellectual, a man who was pursuing his doctoral degree, by the way, in Germany, who is a man of letters, a scholar, a fine young gentleman. And here he is facing years in prison for simply having intellectual opinion, an historical opinion about a period of time that is certainly open to conjecture. History has always been written by the winners, and history has also always been written by the friends of the king. That's just the way history works. And you can translate that sentence, friends of the king, to, the friends of the establishment or the forces of the establishment. You cannot get truth from hearing simply one side. You have to have a free discourse. You have to have the power of a freedom of conscience. You have to have a power of the freedom of speech. You have to have the power of freedom of debate. These things have to be worked out both in academia and both before the public. But we haven't had that debate truly in the Second World War, because anybody who dares to even debate this, even on a very low level, is accused of being a national socialist or a fascist or whatever. Holocaust denier, that's one of those new terms, a term that's not appropriate for the issue. It's a term that evokes guilt in the individual, denying, like a child who stole a bag of cookies, denying that he stole the bag of cookies. You know, when you argue about something that happened in a different period of history that weren't even your people, wasn't even your nation, you're not denying anything. You're not denying. You weren't the denial really goes for the people who perpetrated the crime, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to conflate the idea of killing people or practicing the so-called Holocaust with those people who say that the Holocaust didn't happen. Then they become a denier of the Holocaust, meaning like they're guilty, in fact, of the Holocaust simply because they might believe the Holocaust story is not exactly as they portray it. Now, the deception that's going on in the world today and the war that we're pursuing. And again, that destruction in New Orleans is really kind of got me off on this jag. But the destruction going on right now in Iraq, not only in terms of American men and women, because we're probably going to cross the 2,000 soldier dead either today or tomorrow, and we're probably going to cross the threshold of 20,000 wounded, even though I think it's actually much higher in the next few days. That's 20,000 wounded in Maine. These are, you know, most people today that have a terrible injury, they don't die because of modern medical means, but they live on without perhaps half of their face, or without any arms, or any arms and legs, or the ability to walk, or the ability to speak, many without the ability to see. Without the ability to see, some of them, and not walk, and be disfigured horribly, and be in pain for the rest of their lives. You know, this war is a tragedy for American men. It's also a terrible tragedy for the Iraqi people as well. And I do believe sincerely, I believe along with Robert Fisk, that there's been at least 100,000 civilian casualties in Iraq. But whether it's 100,000 or 50,000 or 30,000, you know, you have to take, you know, 9/11 and, you know, multiply it by 10 or 15. Ladies and gentlemen, it's just incredible the callousness that we really reach. But you've got to understand, the people that are dominating this today don't really have the traditional European values or cultural principles. They've led us into this conflict. And of course, the truth is that they've lied to us about this conflict from day one. Now, there's an excellent little article, and in fact, I was just working on it on the website. As you know, when I'm overseas and doing my teaching and some of my writing, and by the way, I'm meeting with a number of people, and we have a few court issues in this part of the world that I'm, you know, being an expert witness in, which is, I think, a positive event. But I'm also aiding and supporting a few candidates who are launching their campaigns soon in this part of the world, and I'm trying to offer them some advice. And of course, I'm also going to be doing my teaching and lecturing, media appearances, other things that I do, as well as my writing. When I'm over in this side of the world, I find much more time to write, even though I don't know if I have the time, but when I'm back in Mandeville, for instance, working these houses and dealing with all the people I know back there, it seems like the writing goes in the back burner, and it's hard to ever get those things done that I want to do. But occasionally I miss some stories. I do watch the news pretty much every day, or actually I siphon it. I do a Google News alert on certain terms, so I'm able to get news on certain issues. And I get a lot of emails from people about news. But there was an article that was done last year from the Asia Times, which is one of the major newspapers publications in the world today. And it was an article that I had missed, and there some people just recently released it again. And an article I missed, but it's one more piece of very powerful and solid evidence that the Jewish neocons intentionally led us into this war with lies, and that this war was a betrayal of our young men and women, and that it was not a war for America. That was all a lie. Saddam Hussein never posed a threat. It was actually a war for Israel. Now, here's the article. It's called "Iraq Was Invaded to Protect Israel," and that's from a U.S. official, and that's by Emad McKay. And let me quote you a couple paragraphs in this article. Washington: Iraq under Saddam Hussein did not pose a threat to the United States, but it did to Israel, which is one reason why Washington invaded the Arab country, according to a speech made by a member of a top-level White House intelligence group. In a press service and covered the remarks by Philip Zelikow, I wonder what he is, ladies and gentlemen, who is now the executive director of the body set up to investigate the terrorist attacks on the U.S. in September 2001, the 9/11 Commission, in which he suggests a prime motive for the invasion just over 1 year ago was to eliminate a threat to Israel, a staunch U.S. ally in the Middle East. Zelikow's casting of the attack on Iraq as one launched to protect Israel appears at odds with the public position of U.S. President George W. Bush and his administration, which has never overtly drawn the link between its war on the regime of Saddam and its concern for Israel's security. The administration has indeed insisted it launched the war to liberate the Iraqi people, destroy Iraq's weapons of mass destruction, and to protect the United States. Zelikow made his statements about the, quote, unstated threat during his tenure on a highly knowledgeable and well-connected body known as the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, which reports directly to the President. He served on the board between 2001 and 2003. Quote, why would Iraq attack America, use nuclear weapons against us? I'll tell you what I think is the real threat, and actually has been since 1980. It's a threat against Israel, Zelikow told a crowd at the University of Virginia on September 10, 2002, speaking on a panel of foreign policy experts assessing the impact of September 11 and the future of the war on al-Qaeda. Quote, and this is the threat. They dare not speak its name because the Europeans don't care deeply about that threat. I will tell you frankly, this is quoting him now. This is a man who is high up in the George Bush administration now. Okay, an individual who's had a high-level position in one of these neocons. Let me go ahead and give you the rest of his quotes, and this should knock you out of your seat. And the American government doesn't want to lean too hard on it rhetorically because it's not a popular sell, said Zelikow. The statements of the first to surface from a source so closely linked to the Bush administration acknowledging that the war, which has so far cost the lives of nearly 600, that's what it was then, now it's 2,000, and thousands of Iraqis, was motivated by Washington's desire to defend the Jewish state. The administration, which is surrounded by staunch pro-Israel neoconservative hawks, is currently fighting an extensive campaign to ward off accusations that it derailed the war on terrorism it launched after September 11 by taking a detour to Iraq, which appears to have posed no direct threat to the United States of America. Israel is Washington's biggest ally in the Middle East. That's a joke, calling it the ally. An ally doesn't attack you and make and plant terrorist bombs against American installations, and then years later rewards those terrorists and calls them heroes. An ally does not attack the United States USS Liberty, intelligence gathering ship in the Mediterranean international waters, and kill 34 Americans and wound 183 Americans on board, 173 Americans on board. And that's not a terrorist to me. A terrorist doesn't spy on you like Jonathan Pollard does. But anyway, this is really an amazing piece, and we're going to try and get that up soon. And it, you know, it's just one more piece of that puzzle, helping us to connect the dots and to understand where this war is coming from, what's it about, whose interest is this war being fought. There you go. So, anyway, that's about that for that article. I don't have much more time. I'm going to go to a couple of letters. If you want to post, go to info1@davidduke.com. And you can also go, of course, to stormfront.org, the town hall section. I'll try to get to a couple of letters as soon as I can. We're not going to do a long one tonight. You've got to give me a chance to get some rest. And I do appreciate that if you will give me that opportunity, because I am I'm pretty whipped, actually. It's been, you know, a lot of work the last few days. And, of course, whenever you're packing to go out of town for a month or two, you know, it's a tremendous job to get packed. And I had all the work to do in the office, much work to do in the office, and I didn't even get to do packing till about 4 o'clock in the morning. So that's the way it is with me right now. Let's go to some emails at info44@davidduke.com. And we have a few things done. Here's one individual is doing a documentary on Forsyth County, and they say that they want to interview me about that. They also say they will not treat me the way they did on the Birth of a Nation, on the Birth of a Nation issue. Here's a college student doing a thesis on one of my campaigns. Here's one from James M. He says, Bush picks Bernanke as new federal chairman. President Bush named top White House economic advisor Ben Bernanke as chairman of the Federal Reserve Board on Monday to succeed the near-legendary Alan Greenspan. Well, I would say that I don't know for sure, and I don't have a silver ball. I've never looked up this man's credentials before, but I do believe this individual he's appointing is very, you know, similar in his ethnic derivation and his political and social viewpoints as Mr. Alan Greenspan and Mr. Paul Wolfowitz and Mr. Richard Pearl and the rest of them. Again, the Federal Reserve is one of the most powerful positions, actually, in the world. It's completely appointed. It's really for a basically semi-private banking board, and the Federal Reserve has enormous power to make or break any nation, not just the United States. That's right. The Federal Reserve system and the head of that could even break any nation, because the economic impacts and ripples of what the United States does is absolutely incredible around the world. Okay, what do we have here? This individual says he's waiting for the Duke report and wants to see it. Thank you. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I tell you what, I've got to go get some stuff done over here. I'm running out of time. It's getting late in the side of the world. I'll definitely be back with you tomorrow. We can spend a little more time together. Again, you're welcome to post on stormfront.org, the town hall section, and you can go to davidduke.com at info44@davidduke.com and send me a message. Tell me what you're thinking. Offer some sort of post that we can put up there and let us hear from you. We're doing everything we can to advance our principles and stand up for our ideas and values, and we definitely need your support, and there will be some work to do in this next weekend, but that's probably the last weekend we'll be working on that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. And my eyes are starting to glass over. It's been too many hours. I was even working on the next Duke report, not the one that some of you are waiting on, some of you already received the next Duke report right now. Anyway, so I'm going to go ahead and get this in archives, and I hope to see you again tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. That's 3 o'clock Eastern Time. Thanks a lot. Good night, and God bless you.
This has been David Duke for our heritage and our freedom.